You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
This is Live from the Table, the official podcast of New York's world-famous Comedy Cellar, coming at you on Raw Dog XM 99 and at the Riotcast Podcast Network. This is a special bonus episode. This is Dan Natterman, normally the co-host with Noam Dorman, but this is a bonus episode. Noam's not here. He might stop by. But we have Periel with us. Periel never misses a Live from the Table broadcast. We have Dov Davidoff.
Yes,
old friend of the podcast.
Friend of mine,
old friend of the podcast.
Friend of the cast.
How are you, everybody? This is a special bonus episode, as I've said, where we're going to be a little less, perhaps, politically oriented than we might be when Noam's involved, and perhaps a little more comedy oriented. We'll see how it goes. Dov, it's been a while since I've seen you. I've spoken to you on the telephone.
Yes, that's correct.
Are you where? I don't recognize the background. Is that your home in Jersey or somewhere else?
Oh no, I'm in the middle of a closing debacle on my home in Jersey. I won't bore anybody with the details, but it's we should close later this week. But there was some plumbing issues. Somebody, but I had to rent a place in the meanwhile, you know. And ironically, it's more expensive to rent a place out here than it is in the middle of Manhattan right now, which is the first time in my lifetime that's the case. And it's, because if you're right outside the city and there's some trees around, whatever moneyed exodus took place from the Upper East Side, the Upper West Side, and the West Village is looking for places in Westchester and you know, Jersey in Montclair area, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, I'm above a dentist office, but I'm in a nice neighborhood. I walk through a dentist, a waiting area in order to get up to the third floor of my pre-war one-bedroom apartment. I got a wife and a child. Things are not good with my wife.
You're living in a one-bedroom place with a wife and a child?
I am. There's this little side area where I sleep. I don't sleep with the wife, you understand. It's been some time now. It's not my thing.
So you're in the midst of some sort of separation?
Oh, well, you know, we're not super clear on how it's going to break down, but suffice to say, before I get into it on this and get myself in more hot water than I already live in the middle of, I'm going to, you jumped off the podcast last week. Now, what's going on with that?
Well, MIA. We're going to get to that, but I wanted to finish, unless you don't feel like talking about it.
Fine. I can talk about it.
I can certainly understand why you might not.
We have nothing in common. You understand? She's not a bad person. I met her. Perfect bone structure. Quiet. I painted a personality on that I could get along with. Turns out, I don't get along with her. You can have 10 years of your life go by like that, baby. That's how wild it all is. And that's why the Yiddish proverb is, man plans, God laughs. Don't you get it? And how'd you get that background?
I got it. Somebody sent it to me. I did a Zoom background. If you're listening via the radio, the background says the quarantine cellar.
The quarantine cellar. That is good. It is fun.
Well, I did a Zoom show for a synagogue in Long Island, and they made this background for me. They thought it'd be fun.
Yes.
And so that's how I got the background. And I've been using it much like I have one suit and I use it for all occasions. I have this background. I use
Madness.
It for all occasions.
It's not official artwork. That was
bootlegged artwork.
How are you, Periel?
I'm doing well. You look great. You look like tan and healthy and like all.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not feeling that well.
I would just say before we get on to the topic that you had brought up, as far as your wife is concerned.
Sure. Yeah.
Look, I don't live there and I don't know your wife well. But I would say that I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better mommy for your child.
A tremendous maternal operation.
And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody that has your back to the extent that she does.
I absolutely disagree with you, but I understand that you have the right to be wrong.
Well, that's my perception, but it's very limited. I only see you when
it's
I see
very
you.
Very limited, yeah. That's the opposite term, is limited.
And I will miss her because she has been a part of my life. When somebody's your friend's wife, they're part of your life too. So
Yes, certainly on some level. And I don't see why that necessarily needs to change. We're going to be co-parenting. She'll still be part of my life and me of hers.
Okay, so I'll still, maybe, I don't know if, you'd be opposed to her and I dating in any
way. I not only would be opposed, I encourage you in the most vociferous way I can. You guys belong together. You deserve each other.
Well, let's talk about what you had brought up when was it, Perrielle?
It was Saturday night.
We were doing a podcast. It was me, Ian Fidance, who is a Comedy Cellar regular. And if you don't know Ian, he looks like every character from every 1970s sitcom. He has a mustache.
Baby. Welcome back, Carter.
He looks a bit like Gabe Kaplan, but he could also be any other number of characters from that era. But so we were doing a podcast, and the podcast normally an hour and a half. We were at about an hour 40. And I just felt like it was very incoherent. We were just talking about no two sentences seemed to be in the same topic.
But then the participants were you and Ian and Noam?
And this guy, Michael Moynihan, who's Perrielle. And he's a writer from Vice.
Moynihan from Vice?
Yeah.
I had the unfortunate experience I didn't actually leave, but my experience of listening to Michael Moynihan and Noam get into things was, it was like listening to Dershowitz hold forth on some specific canon of, Western law. I mean, it was so specific and at rapid pace. I couldn't find an area within which to jump in that didn't feel utterly manufactured. And like I was, you don't want to leave.
Oh, that's right. Dove was on the last episode. Oh, okay.
With the Moynihan. Well, this wasn't quite as, it's just a lot of it was, everything hit me at once. All of a sudden, at about 8:35 Eastern Standard Time on Saturday, it all hit me. I'm not getting a word in.
Right.
I'm aging. There is no God.
Yes.
And I don't find this interesting. And it all hit me at one time. And I was about to make a point. They were talking about whether you believed, what's her name? The woman that's accusing Biden, Tara Reid.
Reid, yeah.
And Moynihan said he didn't believe Tara Reid.
Oh, wow.
And I wanted to bring up a philosophical point, or I don't know if you'd call it philosophical, but I kept trying to say, at least four times I try to bring up the point, what do we mean when we say we believe somebody or we don't believe somebody? What is it to believe somebody? We're not, if you said to me, we don't ever believe somebody 100% because nothing
I
is.
Believe, I think the context within which he said it is that he feels as though he can or can't belief rely on the language and pictures being
right. But does that mean that he's 100% convinced with metaphysical certitude that she is lying, or does that mean he's 90% convinced?
What's the difference? It's not a philosophical argument. It's an argument about
what somebody means when they say they don't believe somebody. I don't know what that means necessarily, because I've never been in a situation where I was 100% convinced either way of what somebody tells me.
I think you have been in a situation where you
very are. Seldom, very seldom.
Yeah, okay.
Very
but seldom. I think it's an excellent point you bring up. But that point would be, the context would be that the nuance became so important that you had to determine to what degree you believe the person, as opposed to just accepting the idea that, for instance, who was the accuser for the last Supreme Court, Kavanaugh, right?
Like,
I got the sense that from her perspective, she was a credible, that she was telling her truth, and that I don't know 100% the degree to which it happened precisely like she said it happened, but, I have no reason not to believe the broad stroke story. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, the point is that was a point that I was trying to make a few times and was never able to get it in, never able to stick it right in nice and easy I do. And I just, it all hit me and I just left. And part of me thought, my leaving is actually Perhaps if it precipitates a conversation that's interesting, I will have done the podcast a favor. I felt on some level that the best thing I could do for this podcast
is
to leave, because now they got something to talk about that's a little bit different, a little bit interesting, a little bit specific, not the same thing that basically, I don't recall anything being brought up on that episode that hadn't been brought up before, either by us or by somebody else. That's my take on it. Periel, you were there. You say what? We have Periel with us from Easton, Pennsylvania. Periel, you say what?
So I said, so then you have to know him got very concerned, like, what happened to Dan? And I could tell you were upset and you were annoyed. And I was also like, what the fuck? Like, you don't just get to, like, leave your own podcast in the middle because you're annoyed. But now, you know, now that you've articulated to me that it all hit you at once, you know, I've got some empathy.
Well, hit me, the lack of meaning in the universe.
Fair enough. I accept that. And also, I love you.
The lack of coherence. What's that?
And so Noam was like, well, where did Dan go? And I think I said, well, I think he got frustrated because he was trying to say something and everybody kept cutting him off. And no, to which Noam said, and he said a few times that he felt bad and he was worried about you and he couldn't concentrate because now he was thinking about where's Dan. And then he said, but I think I was in the middle of a sentence and Dan interrupted me. I'm going to have to go back and look at the tape. And I said, are you out of your fucking mind? Is that really the response you have? Because you could also just say, oh, I'm sorry, like maybe we hurt his feelings a little bit. Not, I'm going to go back and roll the tape.
Right, yeah.
And he said he also did that to Juanita the other day because they got into an argument.
Pardon? Anyway, look.
Although you're not allowed to.
I feel bad about it too, to be honest with you. I tend to do these things once every 2 years or so. I tend to storm off.
Fair enough.
Either in not really storm off necessarily, but blow up. It happens every couple of years. You know, it all builds up. It builds up like a fault, like the San Andreas fault. You know, it takes a while for the pressure, the seismic pressure, to build up, and then there's an earthquake. Because
listen, I didn't see the specific context, but I know as a general sort of idea and as it relates to Dan, I think it's not only forgivable, but perhaps there is a net positive. I like the idea of Dan experiencing something to the degree that he walks off his own show. I mean, there's something really interesting about somebody that's just, you know, you got Noam and there's Moynihan. I mean, two political animals. I mean, they can go into, I mean, I'm sure all kinds of esoteric was brought up between those two. And Dan said, I can't take this anymore, either the rhythm or some of the aspect of the patter. And he disappeared. I mean, I think that's it's endearing.
It's certainly forgivable.
Yes.
I do think that there's something about, well, first of all, you know, I think Dan has said on numerous occasions that when we get that into the weeds with the political stuff, he feels like, yeah, it's a little bit much, which I can understand and appreciate. But I also think that the nature of the podcast is when you let it run endlessly. And to be fair, we didn't structure that episode as much as we structure some others. You can't just let it go on and on and on. Like, this isn't just like a free for all. And so maybe the onus was on me a little bit for not.
It's very difficult.
Well, if I can find a Periel, I'm certainly not opposed to it, though I don't know that in this case it's merited.
What, to just drone on for hours?
No, blame on you, I'm saying.
Oh, no.
The onus was on you, and I'm happy to blame you. I just don't know that in this particular case. Though, again, I'm not opposed to it as a general matter.
Think that I should say, like, we have to call it at an hour, and we do need a structure, and unless something, you know, unbelievable comes up, we got to stick to the talking points.
Did Ian Fye Dance have anything to say? I mean, was it just sort of rapid fire
Moynihan
and Noam?
No, it was great.
The dance was fine.
It was fine.
I didn't ask if it was fine. Was he getting involved in the conversation? Was he able to jump in at points? Or was it mostly Moynihan and Dwayne?
No.
Airing into a George Stephanopoulos / Chris Wallace like discourse about Barry Goldwater's campaign in 1960. All right.
I was for the first time, it's been 2 months since we've been locked down, and I left New York City yesterday for the very first time. I rented a car and I visited my parents in Connecticut.
You're so good, Dan. That was so sweet of
you.
Well,
that's so sweet. Come on.
It is. It is.
I don't know that that's sweet.
Have you ventured out, Periel?
I am in Westchester. I left in the end of March.
Okay.
I'd like to hear Dan.
First of all, it's sweet. It's sweet unless I contaminated the whole damn apartment complex they live in, and then it won't be so sweet.
Did you go inside?
No, they wouldn't let me inside, but we took a drive. They wanted to take a drive. My mother wanted to take a drive. Now, I was a little bit hesitant to go in a car because it's confined space.
Yeah.
I left the door open, and we all wore masks, and I'm hoping that was – and I probably don't have it. I mean, if they have it and I get it, it's not likely to be a tragedy. But if I have it and they get it, it's another story. But I wore a mask, and they wore a mask, and I opened the window of the car for ventilation, and I assume that that's probably adequate, even assuming I had it, which I probably don't. So – I'm not overly worried, though I was somewhat concerned. And, you know, it was just not, I haven't driven in 2 months. I haven't been in the car. I haven't been outside New York. So it was nice to, you know, it was nice to just kind of be on the open road.
Yeah.
With the radio on. So, you know, that was the first time I've been out. I know the Dove's done some traveling, I believe.
Listen, I mean, after I was quarantined for a while, I went to see my mother. My mother's in her 70s. She has HIV. I mean, she's HIV positive. I mean, she would certainly represent an at-risk demographic. And so you got to be careful. And, I mean, at some point, you know, as the curve begins to flatten a bit, we know a little bit more about this, you make a judgment call. Look, you know, I mean, you cross the street, you leave the house, an air conditioner could fall on your head. I mean, at what point do you think the probability is low enough that you continue on and make some contact while taking precautions?
Where is your mom?
My mother was staying with my brother in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. He's got 26 acres up there, but now she's staying with a friend. And I don't know. This is a strange, you know, all of the distance. I was listening to a doctor making an argument. You know, if you listen to some conservative pundit, you hear one thing, and then, you know, on the other side. But he said, if you live in California, for instance, where they've closed recreational beach use for the next, you know, through July, from what I understand, he said you have a 0.03% chance of dying of, COVID-19 in the state of California. And of that, the subset that's dying, the biggest percentage of that tiny percentage are, you know, old and at risk. And basically, he was making the argument that, you know, at some point you make a judgment call and you try to do
your best. I also find that the more this goes on, the more I'm willing to take chances because the more I feel like I haven't gotten it. So, for example, you know, if I touch my face, the first time I touched my face outside, I was all concerned. Then I didn't get it. And the next thing you know, I'm touching my face and not worried about it. It's little by little. You know,
we know what the rollout's going to look like at this point. If you've been to Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or a takeout, you know, restaurant, I mean, we know what it looks like. It's just, we're going to be wearing masks for a while and we're going to be social distancing. And, in restaurants that open back up, we don't know whether it's going to be 50% room capacity at some point or whether it's 25%, but it's not just jumping back into whatever form, you know. There is certainly a new
still stare at women even with the mask on.
I had an experience outside.
You can still tell pretty with the mask.
I was driving by a urgent care facility. You know, Manhattan is the middle. I mean, it's New York is the epicenter. If you're outside of New York, I mean, everybody knows that. But she had tight pants on, and likely a Puerto Rican vintage, and she had a mask, and. And I thought to myself, I don't know why she's online. If she did have COVID and was immediately willing, would I engage from behind? and I thought, I didn't have an answer. But I wasn't able to just say no. I mean, to the fantasy. I wasn't able to just say no.
My answer would be no, because I don't feel like getting sick, but...
I don't feel like getting sick either. That's what made it be an interesting consideration.
That's why he was going to do it from behind, so he doesn't get.
Yeah, from behind, like a gentleman. What am I, an animal like you? What do you think? I'm making out with the broad. I put it in from behind, no eye contact, just like I would anybody else under any other occasion.
Okay, well, fair enough. I guess that's a relatively low-risk way of doing it.
So low, from behind.
You could turn around and sneeze, theoretically.
It's what?
You were wearing a mask. I guess you'd be wearing a mask during this whole thing.
I think from behind with a mask is probably...
Yeah.
But you have to wear a condom.
Absolutely. You wear a condom. You put on a mask. And I don't mean just the little, you know, the mask that they wear on the sidewalk. I mean a full Halloween mask, like a wolf man, you know? And then you tear in, and then you walk away, and nobody's the wiser. There's no COVID-19.
So have you been, like, out? I mean, it sounds like Dan and I have been, like, relatively stationary. It sounds like you've really been, like, out and about gallivanting.
Stationary, but Dove's in the suburbs.
No. I was, you know, in Montclair, where I'm at, it's a lot like some part of Westchester. You know, there are these centralized little districts in these towns, you know, like whether it's any of these places, a centralized shopping district. And then outside of that, there are houses and trees. You're far from the middle of nowhere. Montclair is a small city, but I don't know. I mean, I haven't been totally confined in an apartment, certainly for the first month. You know, when I was living in that private community, it was really just me inside the house, inside of a private park. So, but
and
now...
when did you leave that? That was the house that you left?
That was the house I was selling. And so they finally...
Banging, by the way, it's a banging noise we have to address.
I apologize for that. You know, perhaps one of the texts that came in, I think, is interesting to read in the context of everything that's happening. And this is written by the great Andy Levine. He was a distressed
debt. I'm sure he was. Yeah,
he was a distressed debt analyst. He worked for Cantor Fitzgerald right after 9/11, right after the towers went down. But he said, as it relates to the market going north today, stock market, he said, you know, if you want to know what the end of the world looks like, it's like this. Breadlines a mile long, unemployment off the charts, misery index at multi-decade highs, kleptocracy in full power, and stock market soaring as if it's 1928. And then he wrote The American Experience, 1776, the experiment rather, 1776 to 2020. He's basically predicting some, you know, major calamity, but
I don't agree with that, but
I'm not saying he isn't hyperbolic, but there is a fascinating disconnect between when you look at the stock market, you know, headed straight up, people, and like you mentioned, the idea of bread lines and this enormous disparity between people's experience, it can't be good. I mean, those are the preconditions for the Weimar Republic. In Germany, is the
I don't know. I just read an article that Noam sent me today about how a depression is not inevitable if we handle this properly.
Right. No, that's
we'll have
right.
A recession, but not a depression if properly managed.
Yeah. No, I agree, but there are certainly some. Go ahead, Perry.
So you were in the city looking at real estate.
I was. Yes, I put on a mask. Ironic. It's so strange. You know, it's like. I speak to some young, rental agent, female.
But they're all gay or female in that business, it seems to me.
Well, of course. I mean, listen, if you want to be any good at it. You've got other people. One of my guys in Brooklyn that I've worked with. Anyway, the point being, she said to me, she goes, okay, well, you can come see the apartment. Just make sure you wear gloves and a mask. And I thought, to meet a woman that you've only spoken to on the phone while wearing gloves and a mask in a dark New York City tenement. I mean, it's a hell of a situation that necessitates that. I've been looking at apartments. Yeah.
And
I've never known a straight male real estate agent, but at least in Manhattan, I suppose they exist.
Traditionally it's not for them.
Traditionally
then.
It's traditionally more of a woman, gay guy business, I think.
Unless you're talking about commercial real estate, then it's an entirely different consideration.
I'm talking about resident. I'm talking about like.
I understand.
You know, when we have, the schools are wonderful.
Yeah, you're talking about the Vanna. You're talking about a salesperson. You know, it's Vanna White.
Well, I'm talking about somebody that's into talking about neighborhoods, exposure, and
yes.
Light. You have wonderful natural light. Just straight guys don't think in terms of natural light.
The association is female and homosexual.
You prefer the dark.
That's the case. Yes. You know, I guess we're not supposed to say that in this day and age, but that certainly is the initial association.
We're not saying anything bad. We're simply saying, you know.
Oh, I agree with you. It's
certain people.
Yes, of course, but it could
be nothing wrong with that. Like, for example, if you want to get a diamond cut, you don't go to an Irishman. You know,
that's correct.
You want to get a.
Yeah, a real, you know, one of the Lord's people. Yeah, of course, a chosen person. You go see a chosen person. Yes,
and you get a nice cut.
You get a COVID-19 too, because they can't separate.
Well, you wear a mask, you should be okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know what's going on with the real estate, Dub. I mean, I don't
know. You know, there's a number of considerations, and I don't know how deep into the weeds to get and how interesting it would be to, you know, the average person.
I mean, I think it's fast. I mean, I'm in Westchester. Yeah. I am like a born and raised and bred New Yorker.
Right.
I can't imagine what the, I mean, it's like heartbreaking
what's
going on in the city right now. And like, I know it's going to come
back. Heartbreaking precisely?
What?
What in particular do you find hard?
That in large part, all of the things that make New York City, you know, I hate to say the greatest city in the world because it's just fucking ridiculous, but so
dynamic,
wonderful, and earth-shatteringly brilliant and unique, it's just.
All things that I never do anyway, I should mention. Like,
what?
All things that I never do anyway. Most New Yorkers
That's
don't do
anything. That's not true.
I never go to Broadway. I never go to the museums.
But you could.
Well, yes, I could.
You could take the subway, right? Uh-huh. And you go out to eat wherever you want at any moment.
That's right.
That's a good thing, yes.
This animal wears a backwards hat. You think he buys?
I have to wear a hat because my hair is, you know, which is something I was. You seem to have. I guess you just buzz it, right?
Let's get to the New York part. And yes, you buzz the goddamn hair, as opposed to looking like a homeless person with a backwards ball cap on, like a lunatic. What are you, a 13-year-old Puerto Rican kid?
Well, given the times that we're living in, I would think you'd be a little bit easier on me in terms of my...
Now, listen, you look good. I'll tell you that. You look good.
Look at that hair. His hair. Take your hat off for a second. Look at that full head of hair.
I have a lot of hair. That's all I... That's not all I have, but it's a lot. One thing I do have is a full head of hair. Now, they say God will never give you anything. God only gives you what you can handle, and perhaps that's the reason I have a full head of hair, because I don't know that I could handle being bald. To be quite honest with you.
Well, God clearly doesn't just give you what you can handle. I mean, given all the suicide, all the people that choose to, you know, I mean.
Right. But all the people that say, the people that commit suicide aren't around to say God only gives you what you can handle.
That's right.
Everybody's God only gives alive the people that says that.
Right. So God only gives the people that don't commit suicide what they can handle.
Right. It's like the people that say, you know, in the 70s, we didn't wear seatbelts and we're fine.
Yes.
Except for the people that are all dead from not wearing their seatbelts in the 70s. We're not around to post memes like, we had a great time in the 70s. No seatbelts. We stayed out on the neighbor's vans without, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. No. They didn't. So, yes, God sometimes gives people more than they can handle. In my case, so far, he's been knock on wood. He's been reasonably.
I don't know how much to attribute to our Lord and Savior, how much to attribute to your resilience and your ability to walk around with a hat and look ridiculous while you grow hair out like you fell out of a bass guitar shack in Woodstock, New York. Listen, the interesting thing about New York that Periel was talking about was that the city has, it's not just the cultural aspects of that, you're better off going backwards. God damn, that's long. I mean, it's almost like you've been shut in for longer than 2 months.
Well, I started off, you know, wherever I was when I started off, probably needed a haircut when I started. I was calling Reagan Baker, you know, Rory Albany's girlfriend who cuts my hair.
Yeah.
She has a hair cutting. Do you know Reagan? She's Rory Albany's girlfriend. She has a hair cutting salon. But anyway, I was probably about to call her, and then we got shut in, and that was...
Yeah, no, you got to adapt and overcome. I mean, how long are you going to let that get? If Cuomo doesn't allow barbershops to open
at some point, I'll just do what you did, and I'll just buzz it.
Like a man, you take out a buzzer. You go get a buzzer at CVS, and you tear it down like a gentleman.
My girlfriend shaved her. She did the same thing.
Yeah.
And she has like a three-year-old and her husband, and they just all buzzed all their hair off. They look great.
That might happen.
To go on. So
as it relates to coming to New York Ferriel, one of the considerations.
Vaccine or Clipper in my future?
The Clippers in your future. One of the considerations was, do you take advantage of sort of lease numbers that have fallen, or even to buy a place? I mean, things have fallen in terms of value in the near term. Now, at some point, things are going to come back. And so New York is, relative to what it's always been, there is a depressing aspect to this. I think what you were referring to in terms of the dynamism of the city, and Jackie Mason always had that thing about New York where people would go, you know, I live in New York. I mean, we've got culture, we've got the ballet. And Jackie Mason said, well, did you go to the ballet? And the guy's like, I don't go to the ballet. I mean, but you got a ballet. I mean, that whole routine.
That's like what I was alluding to.
Yeah, that's what you were alluding to. But I think the part that everybody feels, whether or not you ever go to a ballet, is there is a kind of dynamism, the kind of person that's drawn to the street in New York. And that energy is why it's the screening process that prevents some of the morons that end up in LA. If you've got big fake tits and you love bleaching your hair and walking around on 3-inch pumps, you're screened out of New York. You can't live like that. Tits aren't currency in New York in that same way. And so it screens out so many jerk-offs, because if you don't have that kind of experience of a city, why would you live in a little box for $3,000 a month? And so there is a dynamism, and that dynamism is removed on some level when suddenly you leave the house and you can't go into a restaurant. New York's got the greatest food in the world. Or you can get some takeout, but yeah, that's not the same experience. You don't want to walk up next to, you want to sit. It's a cafe kind of life. And so all of the things that make New York, New York are kind of removed to some degree. And that is sad. It's also why prices have dropped. And then the argument is just financial. It's whether or not you come in now, before things start to return, you want to buy on bad news, sell on good, overall, in terms of the broad strokes.
So that's the professional take, is if you can buy something in New York right now.
Well, I think if you want to be there long term. That being said, I don't think New York is going up anytime soon. And if we want to get into an actual technical analysis, the decentralization of these business districts are going to trickle down. I'm a landlord, and I'm developing in Brooklyn, and I don't feel good. I feel okay about my project because of my margins. But if you own an office building, or if you think that, I mean, the one thing this pandemic has proven, by way of, you know, Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan and a number of other software guys, is just that you never could have experimented with Zoom or remote work from home on this scale. And what they learned was, you can do it. You can run businesses while not being in a centralized office district, which means you can reduce OPEX, operating expenditure in a business, by a significant percentage, not renting huge lofts or office space in a place like Manhattan. And then, like, yes, there are diehard city people that still want to be in New York, and I'm one of them. But I would imagine a lot of people that work in finance on the Upper East Side would be just as happy to live in Connecticut. A lot of them, they're working to get out of New York. And those people, if they can start to work from home, and many of them can now, I don't think they're coming back. And I don't think there'll be the same drive in order to be there, which will reduce pressure on pricing. And things will come down a little bit.
Now, that's a good lead into what I want to discuss with regard to comedy, remote comedy, which is obviously, I mean, and I can't imagine that remote comedy will ever replace live comedy. However, there has been some remote comedy. I've done some shows that I've talked about on other episodes via Zoom. And a lot of people are doing that sort of thing. I wonder, Dove, if you've done any Zoom shows.
No, you know, the Comedy Juice, somebody asked me, it was like a month ago, and I was just not, I didn't have my head in the game. I just said, no, not at this point, but I would. I mean, how do you do it? You walk around in front of your computer. How do you catch the
I'm doing right now in front of my computer. I did a show with this very background that I had these bricks in the back.
Okay. I like it.
It's on Zoom. They have, like, on Zoom, you can do it where you have hundreds of people on.
Did you find that there were parts of your act that, like, things were a little bit more choppy because the transitions were not, you know, practiced?
Because I'm out of practice, yes.
Of course.
That, but also, you don't have the laughter. What happens is everybody's at home, since everyone's at home, they had their kids might come in.
You got to assume you're killing. You have to assume you're killing rhythmically.
You have to turn everybody's mic on mute because otherwise you'll hear kids. You'll hear kids coming in, "Mommy, what are you doing?" Dogs barking, whatever.
Yes.
But they mute everybody. We mute everybody.
You unmute a few people maybe that you're like, okay, he's home alone with no pets and no kids. So we know him. So we'll unmute him and we'll unmute a few other people that we
can Josh, kind of vet. Come in?
We can kind of vet them. To know that they're not going to have background noise, and this way, at least a few people are laughing, and so you get that rhythm going. And also, another thing is also I've noticed that you tell a joke, and there's a delay, you know, in terms of when you tell it versus when they hear it. So there's that slight delay, which is not so. You know, it's not anywhere near the same as being.
You make adjustments. It's like doing a show in Amsterdam. They speak English, but you don't want to go with the same rhythm. You want to use your hands a little bit more and leave space for them to kind of half German laugh at things without actually laughing out loud. It's like working for the Dutch.
It's imperfect in a lot of ways, but what I've only done a few of them, and I've also produced a couple of them, it seems that the audience is incredibly grateful to be there and is very forgiving of the technology.
Yes. This is really interesting because I had a teledoc appointment. My son was running a fever. And I don't know that the word rewarding is. But the experience of doing it was far better than I thought it would have been. I would have thought being in person would be significantly more superior, kind of like. It wasn't. I mean,
what did the doctor, I mean, he can diagnose the kid. He couldn't.
I'm not saying that physical proximity isn't a priority under certain conditional experiences. But you don't necessarily. You know, half the time you're just saying, look, he feels this, he feels that. And she looks at him through the computer and she's like, is he doing this, 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 and this? Which is what they do in a doctor's office. And then instead of them taking his temperature, you take his temperature. It's very real. Like, it furthers the idea that there is a remote facility that we no longer have to be in large centralized districts anymore. And so, you know, but as it relates to comedy, it's like, you know,
I don't think this will ever in any way substitute for live comedy. But I do think that there might be, if I can make a prediction, I think there might be a bigger market for lectures via Zoom. So for example, I'm a famous person, say I'm whoever I am, you know, I'm Dershowitz, and I want to give an evening with Alan Dershowitz via Zoom, and everybody pays $100, whomever it is, you know.
Yeah, they do that on online courses now. Yeah, they do that on online courses now.
Yeah, okay. So I think that those kinds of things might, because of this, they might become more accepted and become a bigger market.
I could not agree more. That's absolutely right. You can scale the experience. The business makes sense. You don't have to fly the person in and out. It's more cost effective, and you get the same lecture experience in theory.
Right, a lecture. Now, comedy requires, I think, a certain energy that is first of all, comedy is an evening out. Comedy is a drinking. Comedy is eating. Listen, comedy is socializing.
Absolutely. You're not just going to
replace. It's not the same as a lecture in that regard.
And it's also the laughter, the art of.
And the contagiousness of laughter.
Yes, the contagiousness of laughter. That's exactly.
But a dry lecture about, you know, the First Amendment or, you know, academic discussion, you wouldn't need those things, don't apply, and it might become
but the watching comedy in close there's a reason why stand-up is performed the way in which it's performed.
That's right. And by the way, if you've ever done stand-up, sometimes you'll do a corporate perio. Like when you see comedy at the Cellar, that's the way it's supposed to be done. If you go to a corporate, they'll hire you. You don't know whether or not there's 50 people in a room that seats 400. you can have a set. It doesn't matter how good the material is. If the people are disparately set in a room full of 400, you just realize there's a psychological, the ability to get people to laugh is contingent upon people being next to one another.
Yeah.
You know, if you've ever watched a comedy with a friend as opposed to alone, doesn't mean it wasn't funny. It just means you don't have the same experience, you know, out loud. We're social animals.
Yeah.
Oh, comedy, this is comedy. Interesting.
Okay, go ahead.
The author, Michel Houellebecq, I read a book called The Possibility of an Island.
I love him.
He's a fascinating guy. And it was all about in the future, we'll be able to produce, I was thinking about dating in the pandemic area, we'll be able to produce children in labs. And in this story, the narrative was our genitals began to atrophy because we no longer needed proximity to one another to procreate. And it was all of this sort of, it was danger in leaving these bubbles. And there was a lot of crossover, you know, between that dystopian fantasy and the way New York feels right now.
Houellebecq, I have read some Houellebecq. He's a French writer, so I read him in the original French.
Ooh.
Wow, that is really fancy.
Cool. I would have loved to do that.
Getting, but I don't know if I read the possibility. I read, I might have read it years ago.
Trying to think of what the book that I was obsessed with that he wrote.
The Elementary Particles, he wrote The Possibility of an Island, and he wrote one, The Map and the Territory. I've read...
Did he write Road Dog, or was that you?
I wrote Road Dog, but I wrote it in the original French.
Yeah, you can. By the way, you can buy Road Dog. Is it still selling? Dev wrote a book a few years ago called Road Dog.
Yes.
Yeah, really? I didn't know that. I'm going to read that. Whatever. I read Whatever. I read a few of them, but the book that I was thinking about by Houellebecq is Whatever.
Yeah.
By the way, did Jessica want to stop in, or she's being shy?
She's being shy. She has she's always been shy, but yeah, I can get it to stop in.
Well, I thought it might be interesting to get her to stop in.
Yes, hold on.
And why not do it in a way that can kill time on the podcast?
Well, I don't really think we want to be quote unquote. I mean,
I say it tongue in cheek, Perry. I don't mean kill time so much as you know, whatever. Anyway, yes.
And did you read Dub's book? Well, I mean, it makes me feel a little bit better because you haven't read my book.
No, but we're going to be discussing it on Wednesday. And Wednesday, by the way, for a special treat, we have Bernie Fabricant coming on, who's a friend of Noam's, who's read Periel's book, On My Knees.
I wonder if we should have Steve Fabricant join him.
Well, we could, but I don't think Steve read the book. But this book is about Periel's sexual awakening.
No, it's not.
It's not? It's called On My Knees.
You have to familiarize yourself with the material. I mean, you can't just make assumptions.
Well, I certainly can. You can correct me. I mean, a book that's called On Your Knees, I would imagine there's a lot of sexuality in that book.
There's some sex stuff for sure. Although I haven't read it in a long time, so.
You've got a terminal shyness. Not coming in.
Okay, that's understandable, especially given the situation.
It's not understandable.
Okay, well, either way.
Well, I mean, first of all, look, my husband doesn't like it when I do that to him either. I try to like pull him, and you know, he's not into it. He doesn't want.
We were talking about Periel has a book also, and on Wednesday, Dove, Bernie Fabricant, you know Steve Fabricant, outside Steve, his brother, read Periel's book. It's called On My Knees.
Oh. So, yeah. Oh, right. I know. I got such a stack. I have to read that. Let me.
I know. I'm going to read yours too. Noam and Dan still haven't read it, by the way. Mine. This is what I wanted to tell you. I wasn't going to share this publicly, but in the interest of the podcast, and since we're talking about Zoom doctors, I also had a Zoom doctor appointment with a proctologist because I had a hemorrhoid.
Oh, wow.
This is too much information. I'm going to have to cut this off right now.
Damn, wait, don't leave. You left the last podcast.
I'm not going to leave.
But why is that too much information?
Too much information. It's not, no, come on now. Come on.
It's perfectly reasonable.
I mean, you know, it happens, Dan. I don't think people should have to be embarrassed to
share that. Absolutely not. Now, how did you guys work together?
A lady of all things.
That's one of the types of Teladoc scenarios that I would imagine could be problematic. So how did you...
Well, imagine having to take your pants off.
Yes.
Show your butthole.
Yes.
Online.
Oh, I've seen videos.
Yeah,
I mean,
a lot of people do it, but not in a medical.
Yeah, a lot of guys have paid for this, by the way. And it wasn't a doctor.
That's what I said. I was like, this is not, like, I don't usually lead with this.
Yeah, you're like a cam girl.
It was insane. But
they paid you $200 for that, as opposed to you having to, you know.
He did. He Venmo'd me after the.
Yes. Dan will Venmo you.
Well, but look.
What I was going to say is that it was, I mean, he was amazing. Like, I thought it was just going to be like a complete disaster. Yeah. And he was so professional and just like neutralized the humiliation.
Is the man? Okay. I mean, there's women doctors now, you know, Perio.
Yeah,
I know. Had to be a guy if you were, whether you were going a guy, do you have a male gynecologist as well?
No, my gynecologist is female, but she's a lesbian.
Yeah.
So, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even a lesbian woman's not anywhere nearly as sexually threatening as a straight man as a general matter. I could be wrong.
I think it depends on the lesbian and it depends on the straight man.
Yeah, sure. On average,
I think on average, you know, the.
Although I have, I always refuse to go to a straight male gyno. I thought it was like totally fucking creepy.
Well, I think that.
Although if I were a lesbian,
you had no choice. But now we have plenty of female doctors. Also, there's gay doctors too, but we have plenty of women doctors, and you don't have to be forced to go to a male doctor, a gynecologist anymore.
Well, I don't think Perio was under the impression that she was being forced.
No, but I'm just saying, in my mother's generation, you had no choice. That's who was, you know.
That's interesting. Yeah,
you know, no, you had male. That was it. You know,
right? Women didn't become doctors for the most part. So you know, whoever you went to was likely to be a man. You know?
I don't like going to male doctors for that sort of, generally, in this case, I didn't have a choice because we're in the middle of a global pandemic and, you know, I was sort of freaking out and this is what, but he was, he was great.
There was this gorgeous girl that used to be a waitress at the comic strip. I remember her telling me that she had no money and she went to like a clinic. And for her gynecology exam, it was like, and it was a guy.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking that guy must have been thinking, "Oh boy, I tell you, I've put my time in, and now the reaper.
Now I am reaping the rewards, baby. This way."
This is like a young, hot, modelly looking girl, and I can't imagine that gynecologists. I know they see it every day, and most of what they see is probably not that pleasant. But it's hard for me to imagine that they could completely put their sexuality aside when some...
They don't complete... Well, perhaps they
do.
But certainly professionals compartmentalize to the degree that they're not jacking off right after you leave the room. Or maybe some of them are. But Perielle, were you guys able to...
I'm really curious what you guys are saying right now. Like, do you really think that like all straight male... Because I always sort of agreed with you guys, but it's interesting.
I'm not saying. I'm saying if a 20-something, you know, thin, modeling girl comes in,
drop dead gorgeous, sick-looking girl walks in, gyno exam.
I'm saying Scarlett Johansson at 25 walks into your office, and you're just like, and it's nothing to you. It's hard to imagine, and it just.
I agree.
Okay,
no, that's 100% right. But you know what would help you compartmentalize the sexual aspect of it is looking at, you know, myriad 79-year-old twats. I mean, that's, after a while, you get into it so deep, and it's so dark. It's so endless. That, you know, after a while, I could see some compartmentalization. Anything that you do all day, it's called the law of diminishing returns. Not everybody's sitting around with a fake brick wall with a backward hat on, jacking off every time they see a 19-year-old broad's ass. Some people, if you're seeing it all day long, it's not that much of a heat. But yeah, you're right.
You see ass and you see vagina all day long. What you don't see all day long.
I agree.
Is supermodel ass and vagina necessarily?
I understand. No, you're right.
That happens to walk in, which it may, probably won't in your whole career. It
you're
probably
not wrong.
But it might happen. But if it does happen, the question is can you be?
If you're a doctor in Soho, it's going to happen once a day.
Yeah.
No, you're right. I mean, it depends where you're at.
Pretend you just play it straight, though, right?
You're going to say, well, that's very
you
interesting.
You got to play it.
Right. I see your shape down there. Oh, is that a bad thing, doctor? No, I'm just saying. Your shape.
Yeah, I see your shape down
there. Back in my day, you know.
Ferriel, were you able to sort of reach some conclusion as to, you know, what's like, and he was like, just do this, this, and this. And he didn't feel like, oh, come in person?
Yeah. I mean, he was, well, the first thing he said that, because when I was obviously mortified, he was like, look, I do this all day long.
Right.
So,
right.
You know.
Right.
And that made me feel like not. Like I didn't want to kill myself anymore.
I totally get it. I focus. I had some guy when I couldn't get my wife pregnant, somebody came in and he wanted to cup the piece, and he said, you know, it's an odd thing to have a guy drop his hand in your shorts as a grown man who's not into that sort of thing.
Well, doctors also stick their fingers up your butts, don't they?
I've never had that done.
Dan?
Well, yeah, you know, I had a colonoscopy years ago.
They put that glove on and...
Yeah, well, colonoscopy is another story. They just put you out, and then by the time you wake up, it's all been done, and you don't know what the hell they did.
it's like being raped at a fraternity house.
They might have done. Who knows, you know? Yeah, I mean, maybe I was out for however long I was out.
Yeah.
That's how they checked
and they were like, well, you know, we're all done with the colonoscopy. We still, you know...
You got some time.
You can wake up for another half hour. What now?
you got 30 minutes. It won't take us but 10 minutes to fuck this guy good. He'll never find out.
But I'm assuming it was nothing untoward.
Well, there are these stories.
Many.
I wrote about one of these in my first book, which was this OB was carving his initials in the women's torsos. Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's not, that's one of the things that's, you know, it's
well, getting tougher and tougher. You had that gymnast doctor.
Yes.
Dr. Nasser.
Yes.
Who was doing whatever he was doing, you know. You got to be careful, you know.
Yeah, you got to be careful. Yeah, no, that's the lesson we take away.
Especially if you're a female, especially if you're a gymnast. I mean, these girls are all, you know, young and in very good shape. So I prefer a tennis player's body to a gymnast body. I would like to be the USTA or whatever the Women's Tennis Association. I'd like to be that doctor, you know, perhaps. But
yeah,
the gymnasts tend to be kind of short. And we are the
long. Yeah, I don't know that they make that face, but certainly there is a spark plug aspect to the physique. But you wanna help, you know, care for the women's tennis.
Like Anna Kournikova, though that's an older reference. Of Martina Hingis.
Yeah, and as a physician, you think that you could help that you would be that much more committed because you find them physically attractive.
Well, I don't know if I'd be more committed. I'm saying if I had to be a woman's athletic doctor.
You would pick what kind of doctor?
I would prefer the tennis team to the gymnastic team. I would prefer the gymnastic team to the weightlifting or women's rugby squad.
Yeah, and you'd prefer them to, you know, senior citizen yoga. But
well, if I had to drop a list, you know.
But I don't think that's how people decide what kind of doctors they want to be, is how sexually attracted they are to the kind of...
Wait a second, Perio, you're saying that all physicians don't go into the medical field by determining whether or not they're attracted to the person that they might be working on, and only psychopaths do that?
But I wonder why this guy... Well, you may not, but this guy Nasser, I mean, how did he get into women? That's a pretty specific thing. Woman's gymnastic doctor. I don't know how he got into it, but
the chicken or the egg.
It's a valid question.
When they offered him the post, they probably said, look, we got a couple of openings here for you. There's a retirement community in Florida that needs a doctor. There's a women's gymnastic team that needs a doctor. Well, he was thinking, be honest, either one.
I could go either way. Let's flip a coin. Luckily, he had a two-headed coin in his pocket.
It's true, because obviously this guy was always a sociopath, right? Like, he didn't just become
always. Are you kidding?
That is so sinister.
Yeah, he started out with tremendous integrity, but he just couldn't. I mean, yeah, you know. He should have chosen, you know, he wouldn't be in jail had he chosen the women's Mahjong varsity team.
The Mahjong team. The women's Mahjong team.
The Mahjong. You know, that's what he should have gone with.
Well, but what people should do and what they do is...
Of course.
And what we all, you know, and therein lies the difficulty. But so you're looking, so where's your next move? You're in Jersey in this one bedroom rental, and now you're looking to get a place in New York?
Yeah, well, I'm in a rental because I had to move out of my place. I had to move out of my house. We were supposed to close, you know, on Friday, and there was some plumbing thing. Long story short, we're supposed to close this week, in which case you got to be out. And then
where's your life going?
I will likely buy her a small house. As sad as that sounds. But I need to be in proximity, so I would like to be in the Westfield. I'd like to be 35 minutes from my son, and then my son will, you know, be with me a couple of days a week and then spend the rest of the week with her, and then I'll be able to come out from the city 2 days a week. So I get to see him four days a week.
Where is Emerson now?
Emerson Allen Davidoff is sleeping. He's taking a nap. The boy is taking a nap. I'm sorry.
He's
what's that, Perry?
I said at 8 o'clock at night he's.
I'm sorry. It's not a nap. No. I was thinking about earlier trying to put him down. No. He's sleeping.
So what's half an hour from the city? Because I'm thinking in the other direction. Yeah. My husband is trying to get out of Manhattan now.
Yes. Well, in this case, a half hour is Montclair, Verona, West Orange. It's closer to downtown than Ardsley. It's a little bit closer to downtown than Lower Westchester. If you were on the Upper West Side, hopping on the West Side Highway and getting to Gnomes would probably be quicker than getting to my house. But it's pretty equidistant. You know, I'm as close as you can get to Manhattan, to Lower Manhattan, and still be in an environment with trees. You can go... In West Orange, where I was, you can go 3 minutes from my house and be in an urban environment, or you can go 3 minutes the other direction. It's really the line. It's the dividing line. The hell's Dan doing?
Sorry.
He's looking up pictures of gymnasts.
So I tell you that Emerson is cute. I do enjoy your wife. Never she posts a lot on Instagram.
There's a lot of posts.
And the kid is living such a lot. We talk about this a lot, but that kid... That kid's so dumb, he thinks it's going to continue like this. Every day is nature walks with mommy and wheelbarrow rides and breastfeeding and snack time and nap time.
There's a lot of nap time and snack time.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, would I enjoy that lifestyle? And it's not just that let's face it, we're in lockdown. I'm doing a lot of snacking and napping too, but with the knowledge of my own mortality, which Emerson does not have.
He doesn't have it. That's the name of the game.
He's got a slave girl, a blonde, skinny Canadian slave woman.
Yes.
That literally wipes his ass for him.
That's right. Yeah.
That's correct. Living, you know, quite honestly. But it'll be interesting. I don't have my own kids, but it's interesting to watch. You know, Emerson to see what happens there. We'll see what happens with that kid. It could be interesting. I mean, with Dove David.
Yeah, this was them. This was a yoga. She was trying to teach him to do. Oh, forget it. You can't see on here. My bad. This thing is not coming to an end. What we're realizing, you know, 2 months ago you heard, March 15th, and then May 1st, and then May. This is how life looks already. As things open up, you'll be able to walk into a restaurant, but the wait waitress will have a mask or the waiter, and then there'll be plexiglass between you and the cashier or you and the booth, and there'll be 50% capacity. And what does that mean economically? The systemic effects are substantial, because in a place like New York, you have 10, 15% margins in the restaurant business. You couldn't survive with 50% capacity, let alone 25% capacity. So the landscape of retail in New York City is already altered. You have storefronts that are vacant all over Soho and the West Village. That was never the case before. New York City is changing, and it will be repriced.
I will hold out, as I always do, as is my nature, and perhaps I have no choice, because the only way I can live is to always hold out hope for a miracle. And who knows what treatments are coming down the pike, and who knows.
I'm not saying there won't be a vaccine. I'm saying urban lands.
There will be a vaccine. The question is when. And I'm hopeful that something, hopefully by in a few months, they might discover, you know, hey, we got this drug that helps treat it and, you know, makes everything that much better. And who knows? We don't know. So
nobody's arguing that New York isn't going to be here long after we're dead. We're just saying that aspects of it are changing. You know,
with me when I go.
What'd you say?
I'm taking New York with me when I go.
Hey, of course.
I can't enjoy a bagel on Second Avenue. Nobody can.
These centralized office districts, if we no longer need to occupy them and be in physical proximity to them to the same degree that we do now, that means the nature of urban landscapes can start to shift. And maybe New York will get repriced, things will come down, and it will return to more creatives and artists like it was in the 70s.
I was just going to say that, is that what has as a lifelong born and bred and raised New Yorker, you know, the city has lost in the past 10, 12, 15 years. Everything's a bank and a Duane Reade, and all of the amazing little stores have been priced out.
Listen, and that's why I'm, you know, not as a finance person, I don't think that we're returning to 2016 for a long, long time. But as a person who loves the city, for me, the city represented a kind of dynamism and curiosity and intellect. Like, I came from a junkyard in Jersey in an environment where when I was hanging on the East Village from the time I was 13 years old, and that was the promised land in terms of,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
And
yes.
So now it's become like, when I walk around the Upper East Side, like, I feel like I may as well be in it's like Connecticut, but urban. It's like, it's not.
New York City is
the bank, and it's an apartment building.
Yeah, no, you're right. New York City is the promised land.
It was for me, you know.
Yeah, it was for me too. I grew up in Queens.
Yes, exactly. No, exactly. And so it starts to lose that thing, you know. And it's like, but hopefully, what will happen is things will start to reprice, and then interesting, as opposed to corporate mall-oriented retail, you'll have a return to what used to be these interesting kind of people and shops and environments that then started to populate Bushwick. The nature of gentrification is that people get pushed out from the center.
Yeah. Dan, anyway, you say what?
I say that could be, you know,
That's a deft analysis.
We'll see. I don't know. Dove may be overestimating the extent to which working from home takes over and replaces office space.
I'm saying if 20% of it is replaced, if you run a business, let's say you make those stupid hats on your head, and 20% of your operating expenditure, you don't need to be a banker to figure this out, is that a Ruba Ray hat?
Yes, my only baseball hat. I don't wear baseball hats, you understand. Ruba Ray gave me this baseball hat.
Well, when you play for a Ruba Ray's home team, you wear it with pride, of course. It's not about baseball.
I wear it with pride, but I don't normally wear baseball hats. I find them fraternity-like, and they're not my scene. But with the hair situation such as it is, in a pandemic.
Of course. Of course.
Then I have no choice, but normally I don't wear a baseball hat.
By all means. Nonetheless, when you have a teledoc appointments, and the head of JP Morgan said that you could never have provided proof of concept, there was too much liability involved to determine whether or not people could work from home in an 80,000 person banking institution, they can pull it off, which means you are no longer going to pay $5 million in leasing expenses as a company, if you could cut that in half. And so the proximity.
Well, that sounds to
Midtown
to me
Manhattan
like,
becomes less important.
It seems to me What's like that? What you're talking about is a technology, i.e., Zoom and these sorts of technologies, that could be very far-reaching, but ultimately will be favorable to the economy, with people spending less money on office space.
But it won't be favorable. It won't be economically favorable to urban centers. I agree. There will be a rebalancing. That's why I said rebalancing. I'm not saying
like
there's
the
a loss for America.
The internet killed a lot of industries, but overall, it rendered things more efficient.
We're having two different conversations. You're talking about the arc.
You're giving me the bad news. I'm giving you the long-term good news.
No, I don't see it as bad news. It's bad news if you're a landlord in New York City. It's good news if you just love dynamic, intellectually curious, artistic environments.
Anyway, let's keep the people wanting more. That's what my mom was.
You're 100% right. We've beat this into the ground. You're right.
We've made our points adequately. Dove, hopefully see you sooner rather than later, but who knows?
Monday.
Maybe I'll come out there and we'll social distance.
Yeah, no, let's do that. You're welcome to come here, but I'm in the city. I'll be in the city at the end of the week, and certainly this weekend. Let's plan on meeting up this weekend.
And
you did that, right? You did a
I did that with Sandy Marks the other night. Yeah, we had a we had a 6 foot apart drink. It was rather pleasant. So podcast at comedyseller.com for comments, suggestions, critiques, at Dove Davidoff on all the social media.
Yeah.
Find out what's going on with the road dog. Less of a road dog than he used to be.
Yes, that's right.
On my knees, Perry L. Asherbrand, amazon.com, and all your booksellers will have it in stock. And yes, I guess we'll see you next time. We're going to discuss Perry L.'s book. So that should be very interesting. We'll do that on the next episode. Thank you, everybody.
Wait, and we're going to start doing these every Monday.
Okay,
so
all right.
We'll air them on Tuesday.
Every Monday, bonus episode. We'll see you next
time. Live from the table.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.